when I say goodbye to the third dimension, when I say goodbye to all this amnesia. I do not want to tell you what I know, but I do not know much. I don't ever want to put it on a show, but I do it all so much. And I'll rock with you, and I'll roll with you. Let's go to the beach, or maybe climb some trees. We'll jump in some lakes, or maybe
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
The nuclear question is increasingly being asked, I guess, and it's not necessarily being answered at this time. In the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But as time goes forward and as the takeover of Ukraine does not go nearly as quickly or nearly as smoothly as reports indicate Vladimir Putin expected it to go, the concern grows that maybe Vladimir Putin would bring out the nuclear weapons. Now, when we talk about nuclear weapons, this can mean a lot of different things. And I think some people imagine, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. That's not actually what's being considered here based on what Russia has. And we're going to talk about that. But that's actually not necessarily a good thing, and I'll explain that in a moment. An interesting article from Defense One, concern rising that Putin could use nuclear weapons. Russian escalate to de-escalate doctrine suggests Putin is thinking the unthinkable. And Patrick Tucker, who's a technology editor, writes, the world should take Russia's escalating nuclear threats very seriously. Senior intel officials told lawmakers Tuesday, noting they haven't yet seen clear indications that Putin would respond to the military setbacks in Ukraine with nukes. Putin sparked alarm among nuclear watchers last month when he ordered the nuclear forces put on a special regime of combat duty. Speaking to lawmakers on Tuesday, Avril Haines, the director of the Office of the Director for National Intelligence, said the move was mostly signaling to keep NATO from intervening. However, not everyone is so convinced that these are merely empty nuclear threats. And then the question is, what would it mean if Russia actually nuked Ukraine? Well, there's a lot of discussion of that. And there's an article on heritage.org that, yes, it's the Heritage Foundation. It's an accurate piece. Russia's small nukes are a big problem. And it explains Russia has a 10-to-1 advantage over the U.S. in non-strategic, low-yield nuclear weapons, what are sometimes called tactical or battlefield nukes. And this is actually an area of concern. There are some who are hearing about this and saying, well, it's good that Russia doesn't actually have or would not use the big nukes here. But the way in which it could be a strategic disadvantage is because Russia has those battlefield or tactical nukes and NATO has a much smaller supply of those, Putin knows NATO can't really respond with those particular types of nukes. And this, the concern is, could actually be a signal to Putin. If I do this, they're not going to drop like the big boy on Russia. So therefore, it might be an opportunity to use these types of nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot that you can read about these. These are, again, sometimes called non-strategic or sometimes called tactical nuclear weapons. And these are designed to be used on the battlefield with friendly forces in proximity in contested areas. When we think about Hiroshima, Nagasaki, we're talking about bombs of such potential to devastate that these are dropped when your forces are nowhere nearby with sort of wholesale disregard for the devastation that they're going to cause. The type that is being discussed here when we say Putin might use nukes, we're talking about lower explosive power and designed to be targeted much more specifically. Now, am I saying that it's of surgical precision? Of course not. Of course not. But the idea is it doesn't cause wholesale devastation and fallout like what we saw in Japan during World War II. So that's the concern. Concern is growing. And certainly, you know, there's two sides to how to interpret this going much longer than Putin may have hoped or imagined it would go. On the one hand, there's, well, that's a good thing. Putin thought maybe they could take Ukraine in 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. It's not happening. They're being met with significantly more resistance in Ukraine. And this could demoralize and potentially get Putin to pull back. That's one side. That's the optimistic side. The other side of this from a strategic standpoint is, well, Putin expected it to go quickly and it's not. So it's going to push him towards taking more drastic action. And that's where these tactical or non-strategic nuclear weapons could come in. Obviously, we hope that doesn't happen. And there really are no. I think the one additional thing I would say about it is there is a contingent that is saying, give me a break. Putin, nukes,
nuclear proliferation,
not going to happen. But these are the same people who said, Putin massing troops at the border, that's not happening. Well, yes, it is. Here's the satellite imagery. Putin about to invade the Donetsk and Luhansk, not going to happen. And then Putin does. Putin going to push further into Ukraine, it's not going to happen. And then Russian troops do. A lot of the same people saying there is no nuclear threat from Putin are the same people who said he's not massing troops at the border. He's not going to cross the border. He's not going to cross further over the border. And all of those things happen. So I wouldn't pay particular attention to those people. I want to play for you a fascinating video. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, spoke yesterday via, you know, satellite uplink or maybe over the Internet via teleconference with or to British Parliament and received a standing ovation. And we're going to just kind of catch up on a few of the different things that took place over the last 24 hours. Here is the Russian president, the Ukrainian president, rather, addressing British Parliament about the Russian invasion of his country, Ukraine.
We are looking for your help, for the help of the civilized countries. We are thankful for this help. And I'm very grateful to you, Boris. Please increase the pressure of sanctions against this country. And please recognize this country as a terrorist state. And please make sure that our Ukrainian skies are safe. Please make sure that you do what needs to be done and what is stipulated by the greatness of your country. Best of all to Ukraine and to the United Kingdom.
Have a great day.
it's truly remarkable that a president who, by all accounts, and I'm talking about Zelensky here, was sort of okay, you know, before this and not particularly well liked, has rapidly become a hero, not only within Ukraine, but internationally. And we can debate whether in the totality of what is Zelensky's legacy, that makes sense. It is not really the debate for today, because it is what is happening, being held up as a hero. And I mean, listen, when you look at what he's doing, he every opportunity to have left and so many other things that he chose to do, which he didn't have to. I understand why this is the reaction, regardless of what our thoughts about Zelensky would have been even as recently as 6 weeks ago. Now, what is happening in the Russian invasion of Ukraine? We are learning about yet another one of these columns of armored vehicles and tanks pushing further into Ukraine. We are learning about the refugee crisis of individuals leaving Ukraine, many as quickly as they possibly can, on trains, even walking over the border. I was watching, as I often do, Argentinian news, and Argentina has reporters on the Ukrainian-Polish border. And I mean, just children walking across the border, truly heartbreaking images. In terms of the economic sanctions, yesterday I reported to you that the United States is banning Russian oil imports, and we'll have video a little bit later of Joe Biden announcing that. We also have now learned that the United Kingdom will be banning Russian oil imports as well in a new sanctions move. When you look at a map like the one we have on the screen right now, you see the significant dependence on Russian oil from much of Eastern Europe, in particular Poland and Hungary and other countries. Western Europe, much less reliant on Russian oil. And so saying we are not going to accept Russian oil imports, a much less impactful decision, although still having a major impact on oil markets. Also, over the last 24 hours, Maria Baranova, the now former editor-in-chief of Russia Today, which is state-run media, you might know it as RT, Maria Baranova has now resigned as the editor-in-chief of RT after condemning the invasion of Ukraine. She is well aware that anyone who speaks out against the Kremlin could be in danger, but personal safety is the least of her concerns. She said, "The problem is, I know these people very well. They never send threats, they just kill. So there is a kind of weird silence around me, but I really think we're on the brink of a nuclear war right now. I'm not exaggerating. I have a son. I can't leave because his father won't allow me to leave with him. So I just prefer to stay in Moscow. It seems like we're either in North Korea or we're going to be killed by a thermonuclear mushroom. I wouldn't quit and I wouldn't lose my salary and job if I were sure that we are going to be alive for many years. But I really don't know what is going to happen to all of us next." Unbelievable. Unbelievable situation. And, you know, at the beginning, the question was, will this be days or will this be weeks? More recently, the conversation is, will this be weeks or will it be months? With some analyses from foreign ministries briefing lawmakers that this could be years to some degree. So we will watch it every 24 hours, bringing significant news. And the refugee crisis is getting absolutely heartbreaking to an even greater extent than it was last week. And we're going to talk about more. We'll talk more about the refugee situation on tomorrow's show. In the meantime, let me know, how long do you believe the current state of affairs will last in Ukraine? Let me know on Twitter, where you can find me at D Pacman. The David Pacman Show is community supported media. You are part of that community. And I would love it if you signed up at joinpacman.com and grabbed a membership. We do an extra show every day. We've got this show, the 1 hour podcast, which is free to everybody. But then we do an additional show for our members. You also get the daily show 6 hours earlier than everybody else when you sign up at joinpacman.com. Yesterday, I reported to you that the United States would be banning Russian oil imports. And within hours of that, the U.S. did indeed ban Russian oil imports. And it did again send oil prices up, and we are continuing to see nominally record gas prices, and we may soon see inflation adjusted record gas prices. We're not there yet, but I will let you know when we do get there. Yesterday, Joe Biden made a public statement announcing the sanctions. But in addition, Joe Biden said during his statement, Russia's not going to take Ukraine. Putin's not going to win. And of course, many people liked hearing this, but it also raises questions about, well, how far is Joe Biden willing to go to make sure that that's the case? That's the question we'll discuss in a moment. Here's Joe Biden yesterday.
That'll mean tyrants like Putin won't be able to use fossil fuels as weapons against other nations. And it will make America a world leader, manufacturing and exporting clean energy technologies of the future to countries all around the world. This is the goal we should be racing toward. Over the last 2 weeks, the Ukrainian people have inspired the world. And I mean that in a literal sense. They've inspired the world with their bravery, their patriotism, their defiant determination to live free. Putin's war has caused enormous suffering and needless loss of life of women, children, everyone in Ukraine, both Ukraine and, I might add, Russians. Ukrainian leaders, as well as leaders around the world, have repeatedly called for a ceasefire, for humanitarian relief, for real diplomacy. But Putin seems determined to continue on his murderous path, no matter the cost. Putin's now targeting cities and has been targeting cities and civilians, schools, hospitals, apartment buildings. Last week, he attacked the largest nuclear power plant in Europe with an apparent disregard for the potential of triggering a nuclear meltdown. He has already turned 2 million Ukrainians into refugees. Russia may continue to grind out its advance at a horrible price, but this much is already clear. Ukraine will never be a victory for Putin.
So, of course, we all want to believe, well, most of us, maybe the guy I'm going to play a clip of next doesn't, but most of us want to believe that that's the case, that this, you can't do what Putin has done and win and get away with it and annex or take over Ukraine or install a puppet government or whatever the case may be. The question is, can Joe Biden really be sure of that without ever committing U.S. troops to Ukraine? Now, from the beginning, I've said I don't want U.S. troops going to Ukraine. And Joe Biden has said U.S. troops will not go to Ukraine. There's no question about that. I'm not changing that or arguing against that. The question is, is Joe Biden in a position to guarantee that Vladimir Putin will not take Ukraine and at the same time be sure that that is possible without even potentially committing troops to the fight? I don't know the answer to that. It's sort of an empirical question about the military power and what NATO is potentially willing to do. Now, of course, there's this in between, right, where the U.S. is part of NATO. And is there some technically accurate scenario in which the U.S. doesn't send troops to Ukraine in a direct sense, but does through NATO if NATO chooses to enter? And then it becomes, it's almost like a semantic question, right? Are those U.S. troops because they're fighting under NATO or not? It becomes a semantic question. But the question remains, how can Joe Biden really ensure Putin doesn't win without being willing to send troops? And is that militarily logical? And I don't have the answer. There's different opinions about that, depending on what military analysts' opinions you follow. One other clip I want to play for you, as I did mention yesterday, Joe Biden announcing the ban on Russian oil and gas imports.
We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine. This is a move that has strong bipartisan support in Congress and, I believe, in the country. Americans have rallied to support the Ukrainian people and made it clear we will not be part of subsidizing Putin's war. We made this decision in close consultation with our allies and our partners around the world, particularly in Europe, because a united response to Putin's aggression has been my overriding focus, to keep all NATO and all of the EU and our allies totally united.
So the question about what will happen with gas prices is a real question. As I have said to many of you before, you know, I don't play political games with this stuff. OK, as I've said to you before, when gas prices are up 12 cents and Republicans go crazy and say this is our death knell and an attack on the middle class, we do the math and we look at the average number of miles driven by the average person. And what we're talking about over the period of a month from a 12 cent increase in gas prices is a few bucks. OK, and for most people, it doesn't make a real difference in terms of their budget. We are now talking about something different. We are now talking about gas already averaging. I believe it was yesterday was $4.19 a gallon. I think now we're up to $4.29 a gallon and could be going up to $5.20. We are now talking about significantly more expensive gas that will start having an impact on many people's monthly budgets because of trucking expenses also increasing. It will have trickle down impact on products that people are buying. Now, what is there any upside? The upside is that after, I mean, listen, at this point, it's probably been close to a month of increasing crude oil prices. As of right now, as of this moment of me recording today's show, crude oil prices are down 5%. And what this could be is that, well, everything that can be done has basically been done. And the crude oil market is essentially a futures market. It reflects what do we expect about the supply of oil in the future. And we've seen the price of crude oil continually go up as expectations for supply crunches are priced in as we hear announcements about what's going to be done. We may, and these could, I might end up eating my hat when crude oil gets to 150 or 200 bucks per barrel. We hit 124 yesterday. We're now down to 117. It's conceivable that the uncertainty has all now been priced in. We just don't know. And again, that's just based on what's going on literally as of this moment with crude oil down 5%. So the announcement is made and it is a serious thing. And it is a global issue. It is not Joe Biden's fault, as I explained to you yesterday. Fox News has been regularly bringing on a so-called invasion expert to give his analysis of what's going on in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And oops, lo and behold, it turns out that the guy is a Trump-appointed Putin propagandist. This guy's name is Douglas McGregor. Douglas McGregor has appeared with Tucker Carlson and he's all over Fox News as a so-called expert on the invasion. And it turns out he's one of these sort of Putin defenders who at one point was actually appointed by Donald Trump. Listen to this. This is a very good article from Rolling Stone outlining the entire thing, which says Trump at one point considered McGregor for a number of different jobs, ultimately nominated him to be the U.S. ambassador to Germany. Ultimately, the nomination didn't pan out when CNN reported on McGregor's history of racism. Trump was undeterred, appointing McGregor as a Pentagon senior advisor shortly after the 2020 election. This guy is a bonkers pro-Putin guy. OK, let's look at some clips. Here he is arguing against sanctions, basically saying the sanctions are futile. It's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt Putin. It's not going to hurt Russia.
The sanctions, as you rightly point out, will do a lot of damage to us. They're not going to make much difference to Russia. China will stand with Russia. It knows it has to. Russia has an abundance of food and energy. China will take it all.
Now, everything he said there is wrong. The guy's just wrong. Number one, although initially Russia said, we don't care about the sanctions, they're not doing anything to us, Russia later conceded, actually, the sanctions are very damaging and painful. And it even led to Putin putting nuclear elements of nuclear deterrence on higher alert. So it was wrong that Russia would not be impacted by the sanctions. And then number two, this idea that China will never, ever, ever do anything against Russia. In the last 24 hours, China has started for the first time referring to what Russia has done in Ukraine as an invasion and as a war. And this is not something that they previously had done. So even on that, he is wrong as well. Next clip, McGregor went on Fox News, this time with Stuart Varney, and said the Russian army is actually, it's been too gentle, but now it's going to get everything done within 10 days. He called Zelensky a delusional puppet. And he said that all of the Ukrainian claims about what's going on are propaganda. Wow. All of that is also false.
The first 5 days, Russian forces, I think, frankly, were too gentle.
Mm.
They've now corrected that. So I would say another 10 days, this should be completely over. But the question is, what is it that Zelensky is going to do? The Russians have made it very clear what they want is a neutral Ukraine. This could have ended days ago if he accepted that. And then they could.
Guys, if only Zelensky accepted the invasion, this would have ended a long time ago.
Just the borders. But the eastern part of Ukraine is firmly in Russian hands.
By the way, when he says adjust the borders, he's saying allow Russia to steal the land.
But again, the Russians are not seizing territory. They're destroying Ukrainian forces. That's their focus.
Colonel, it sounds like you don't approve of Zelensky's stand.
Oh, I think Zelensky is a puppet. And he is putting huge numbers of his own population at unnecessary risk. And quite frankly, most of what comes out of Ukraine is debunked as lies within 24 to 48 hours.
That's also completely untrue. And once again, he said that it was only going to be 10 more days. He said this back on March 4th or 5th, which means within 5 or 6 days, according to this expert on invasions, Russia should have taken Ukraine. My prediction is that will not have happened 5 to 6 days from now. And then lastly, here he is saying, we got to stop demonizing Putin. Come on.
Does not want to do in our usual effort to demonize him and his country. We need to remember that Ukraine is fourth from the bottom of 158 countries in the world as corrupt. Russia is perhaps three or four places above them. This is not the liberal democracy.
Now, I don't know what he's citing there, but as many of you know, in multiple serious democracy indices, Ukraine ranks much higher in democracy than Russia.
Shining example that everyone says it is. Far from it. Mr. Zelensky has jailed journalists and his political opposition. I think we need to stay out of it. The American people think we should stay out of it. The Europeans think we should stay out of it.
Now, that's also not true. The American people, although they don't want to commit troops, and I agree with that, the American people think we should be arming and supporting Ukraine. I mean, you can say that that's wrong, but what McGregor is saying is just completely incorrect. Just he is the wrongest man. You know how Alex Berenson is the wrongest man in America on COVID? McGregor seems to be the wrongest man in America on Russia-Ukraine, and Fox continues bringing him on as an expert when he's really just a Putin propagandist who couldn't even get the position Trump selected him for because of his outrageous racist past that came out. We'll have these clips that I played on our Instagram at David Pakman Show if you want to check them out. Okay, the arrests continue to be made in relation to the January 6th Trump riots, even though it's been 14 months and 3 days since the day of the riots. We still see arrests being made, and some of these are major. And the latest one is that Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio has been arrested in his underoos. He was pulled out of bed. Yes, boxers or briefs, not exactly the main question that law enforcement was asking when they pulled him out of bed and arrested him. This is a major, major deal. Daily Beast reporting, Proud Boys leader dragged out of bed in his underwear to face conspiracy charge. And apparently taken by complete surprise, former Proud Boys ringleader Enrique Tarrio was handcuffed in nothing but his skivvies early Tuesday morning as police arrived at his Miami home to arrest him for conspiracy relating to the January 6th insurrection. In footage of the arrest, 38-year-old Tarrio can be seen exiting with his hands raised, surrendering to police. He wasn't at the riot, having been unavoidably detained, that is, arrested 2 days before for burning a stolen Black Lives Matter flag. But the feds allege he organized alongside 5 other Proud Boys members the attack on the Capitol. The riot was the final stage of a convoluted plot involving a flurry of text messages, social media posts, and a meeting in a D.C. parking garage on January 5th. Tarrio was released from prison for the flag burning incident 2 months ago. He has now been arrested once again. The video is pretty wild. There's video of him being pulled out of the house in his ruse, as I mentioned, And the next thing would be, well, it would be great if the politicians who supported the January 6th insurrection were treated in the exact same way. It would really be something, by the way, to see Josh Hawley arrested in a diaper. I'm sorry, in his underwear. It would really be something else. And it would even be more interesting to see Attorney General Merrick Garland in his pajamas arresting Trump wearing briefs or whatever. In all seriousness, this Enrique Tarrio guy is really, really not a good guy. Now, some of you may know about the Proud Boys and some may not. The Proud Boys is a far, far, far right, what's called neo-fascist group by many. It's, as far as I know, it's an exclusively male organization, although it's conceivable that, I mean, I don't know how official membership is anyway. It's conceivable there may be some women involved to some degree. Tarrio specifically is Cuban-American and Afro-Cuban ethnically. And some say, well, that's kind of interesting that this right wing neo-fascist group allows him in or whatever. Yes, they, as long as you are willing to have the right views, there are apparently are no race based tests for neo-fascist Proud Boy membership. But this guy could really be facing very, very serious penalties. And if the name sounds familiar, for a year, there has been discussion of, is Tarrio going to be arrested for his role in inciting, planning, whatever, the January 6th riots? And the answer is that indeed he has been. And of course, when it takes this, usually from what I've been reading and some of the lawyers I spoke to, when things take this long, it's because they really it's not because they wait until later investigators for the more serious charges. It's that the more serious charges often are more complicated to prove and to feel good that you're ready to charge. And so it just takes longer to build the case. That's what lawyers have told me. And we will ultimately see what happens with Tarrio. But we expected that this was potentially coming, and it now has. Ted Cruz has gone viral, and it's not good. I don't know that Ted Cruz has ever gone viral for something good. I remember when Ted Cruz sort of humiliated himself by apparently accidentally liking porn on Twitter. And then they blamed it on a staffer or something like that. And then Ted Cruz went viral when Trump called his wife ugly. And Ted Cruz went viral when he left Texas during the power outages and went to Cancun. If Ted Cruz has gone viral, it's usually not good. And Ted Cruz has now gone viral for sort of his version of what we call the Sir routine. So let me explain that to you. Ted Cruz yesterday had a meeting with the D.C. trucker convoy people. Now, there's so many things going on here. The D.C. trucker convoy is the American version of the Canadian trucker convoy who drove around burning gas and diesel and honking their horns in a principled and defiant protest against mandates. Now, you might be saying, David, what mandates are they talking about? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the main mandate, which was for vaccination or testing, if your business has more than 100 employees, the Supreme Court stopped that. Many, if not most, city mandates for required vaccination to go places like restaurants, et cetera, those are being dropped. I don't actually know what mandates they're protesting. But in any case, Ted Cruz met with the trucker convoy and he claimed that flight attendants and pilots regularly hug him. They regularly hug him because he fights the vaccine mandates. This almost certainly didn't happen. This is a version of the Sir routine that Trump is known for. Take a listen.
Every week I fly back and forth to Houston.
Right.
Almost without exception, every time I'm on an airplane, either the captain or a flight attendant will come up to me, will hug me and say, thank you for fighting for us. Because I'll tell you, United Airlines, sadly, Houston's a hub of them, has fired thousands of pilots and flight attendants.
Now, that's a lie. That's a lie. United has about, I believe, 60,000 U.S.-based employees. And 200 people were let go for not getting vaccinated. 200, not thousands. Do the facts matter? Probably not.
What difference does it make? We're in the District of Columbia right now. There are mandates affecting kids in D.C. This is wrong.
So this is a version of Trump's sir routine. Trump's sir routine is when Trump goes, you know, they came to me and they said, sir,
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 thank you for doing this. With a tear in their eye, they came to me and said, thank you, sir, for allowing unvaccinated people to be all over me and spread. It's almost always a lie when Trump says they came to me and they said, sir, it's almost always a lie when Trump says, and nobody really knows that, it's almost always a lie when Trump says, and it's really a shame, we won this election, but they stole it, and it's really a shame. Those are triggers that it's probably a lie. With Ted Cruz, I mean, I think anytime Ted Cruz is claiming others deliberately made physical contact with him, it's probably a lie. And I can't imagine that flight attendants and pilots are coming up to him and hugging him and saying, thank you for allowing and encouraging unvaccinated people to be getting on our airplanes. And often I'm guessing those are the very same people that wear the mask under the chin on the plane because they just don't know what the hell's going on or just don't care. But again, the truth is United Airlines, 96,000 global employees, about 60,000 of those, I think my numbers are right, are based in the United States. And of those 60,000, 200 were let go for being unvaccinated. And for a very long period, I don't know if it's still, but for a very long period of time, once United put in place their vaccine requirement, their employees stopped dying of the virus. Now, it's been so long now, it's certainly conceivable that now some vaccinated employee has died of the virus. It's certainly possible. But for a very long stretch of time, they were not. Give me a break. Ted Cruz continuing to just tell these stories. And by the way, why is he meeting with this trucker convoy? What I would love to see Cruz ask instead of ranting and raving in this kind of like faux defiant tone about vaccines, I would love to see him ask the truckers exactly which mandates are you here in opposition to? Exactly which ones, tell me, because there's barely any left and all of the restrictions are falling by the wayside. All right. So that's Ted Cruz. There are people who see him as a hero. I don't, but there are people who do. We're going to take a quick break and be back right after this. Make sure you're following us on Facebook at facebook.com/David Pakman Show. OK, I want to talk about William Barr again today. I know we've talked about him already this week. William Barr has a new book. William Barr is Donald Trump's former attorney general. And in the book, Barr makes all sorts of explosive claims, and he's been doing some interesting interviews. Now, I want to make sure my position on Barr is clear. I believe his stories are all true. I don't think William Barr is making up the stories that he tells about Donald Trump. And we're going to listen to another completely wacky one in a moment. That being said, I see Barr as just as much of a problem as all of these other Trumpian clowns. And Barr even said yesterday that despite all of the stuff that Trump did that Barr finds completely disgusting, he would still vote for Trump over a Democrat in 2024 if Trump were the nominee. So the guy is still despicable. He's just trying to sell a book. But I do think he's telling the truth. And you have to hear the story that he told Bret Baier yesterday on Fox News. Barr describes a completely detached from reality Trump, who in the aftermath of the 2020 election, when it was obvious to anybody with common sense that Joe Biden won and that Joe Biden would be president, Trump, according to Barr, genuinely believed he was going to be president for another 4 years. And we've said before, did Trump believe this stuff or was it just a grift? And by the end, it didn't really matter because Trump was still fundraising on the basis that he was going to fight the results and whatever. It didn't really matter whether Trump believed it or not. But according to what Barr tells Bret Baier, Trump really did believe he had won and that he would somehow take the White House from Joe Biden. Listen to this.
Ming, were unsettling moment for you in the administration.
It was certainly unsettling when I went in to talk to the president about the election. And you know, he was livid and shaking and, you know, showed a lot of temper and yelling. That was a little unsettling. But the other thing that was actually unsettling is later when I went in to actually give him my letter of resignation, he started talking about how he had actually won the election and how the machines were rigged and that he was actually going to be there for another term. And he was very confident of that. And I just felt this showed a detachment from reality that was stunning.
Completely disconnected from reality. I mean, what, again, I believe Barr, and what Barr describes there is a very delusional person. And any person thinking through the events of the Trump administration in understanding what William Barr is saying, Trump believed he won. And he believed he would somehow end up spending four more years in the White House. If he was that detached from reality about something so basic about the election's over, Biden won. Biden's going to be the president. You're going to leave. You're going to leave either under your power or that of someone dragging you out. If he was that disconnected from reality about something so simple as how elections work, what else was going on where Trump simply didn't understand the nuts and bolts of what he was involved in? And of course, we have to assume the Putin conversations, the North Korea negotiations, all of these different things. When we hear Trump asked whether you could nuke a hurricane, well, he's just that disconnected from reality. That's how sick he is. Now, William Barr is no hero. As I told you yesterday, even despite all this, William Barr still told Savannah Guthrie she'd still choose Trump over a Democrat. And that's why we have to remember these people are like 98% in the cult rather than 100%.
God, you say in your book, it's time for the party to move on from Trump. Liz Cheney has said he is not fit to serve and should not be ever near the Oval Office again. Do you agree with that?
Well, I certainly have made it clear I don't think he should be our nominee, and I'm going to, you know, support somebody else for the nomination.
But if he is the nominee and you have your choices, Donald Trump or whoever's running on the Democratic side, would you vote for him?
Because I believe that the greatest threat to the country is the progressive agenda being pushed by the Democratic Party. It's inconceivable to me that I wouldn't vote for the Republican nominee.
So even if he lied about the election and threatened democracy, as you write in your book,
it's
better than a Democrat.
It's hard to project what the facts are going to turn out to be 3 years hence. But as of now, it's hard for me to conceive that I wouldn't vote for the Republican nominee.
A threat to democracy, unfit to serve, delusional detachment from reality. And yet I would still vote for the guy because it's better than a Democrat. Just as a couple of reminders, and I know some of you have seen these clips already. Here is Barr saying he told Trump all the election stuff you're saying is BS.
And I told him that all this stuff was bullshit and about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was. And he started asking me about different theories, and I had the answers. I was able to tell him this is wrong because of this.
You're trying to set him straight.
Yes. And you know, he listened. He was obviously getting very angry about this. I said, okay, well, look, I understand you're upset with me, and I'm perfectly happy to tender my resignation. And then, boom!
He slaps the desk.
He slapped the desk, and he said, accepted, accepted. And then, boom, he slapped it again. Accepted. Go home. Don't go back to your office. Go home. You're done.
Yeah. And lastly, also Bill Barr describing the clown show of lawyers. But he would still vote for Trump over a Democrat, guys.
And about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was.
And then he also told Trump what he thought of his legal team. Not a lot.
I said, the reason you are where you are is because you wheeled out a clown show of lawyers.
A clown show?
Yeah. Clown car or something like that. I said, it's just a bunch of clowns.
Who are you referring to? Rudy Giuliani?
His Cracker Jack legal team, among others.
Barr says the president shot back, listing the ways he said Barr had failed him.
Yeah. So anyway, he'd still vote. So I believe every single one of these stories. I do. But Barr has not had some kind of awakening back to common sense or whatever. At the end of the day, if it's Trump versus, it sounds like any Democrat, despite the dangers that Barr has associated Trump with, danger to democracy, unfit, all this stuff, he'd still vote Trump. And that's why it's just a reminder. These are not people we can count on to help us do anything. Anything, anything, anything. Hey, this might be interesting and informative for you guys. As many of you know, we get 5,000 or so messages a day across all of our different platforms. So like YouTube comments, Facebook comments, emails, Twitter replies, all these different things. It's impossible to keep up with all of it. And so we just can't. We just don't. OK, every once in a while, I like to engage with someone. So like 6 months ago, an anti-vax emailer piqued my interest and I said, let me reply and let's see what happens. And then I showed you that exchange and it was really, really wacky and disturbing. So I did it again. Okay. I did it again. The other day I tweeted about the jobs numbers. Now, one of the things we talked about on yesterday's bonus show is in the midst of everything going on politically, the jobs numbers, which are very good. I mean, by every traditional measure, we're basically at full employment. Now, many of you will say, but a lot of people are still paycheck to paycheck and the wages aren't good and the jobs are low quality and people. Oh, 100%. I'm with you all the way. I'm just saying that by traditional measures, which Republicans love to use when it's a Republican president, we are very close to what is considered full employment. And last week, there were extraordinary jobs numbers. Nearly 700,000 new jobs were created. In February, we got the February numbers last week. These are very, very good numbers. And so I simply tweeted just to see, kind of, you know, feel around what's going on. The jobs numbers are very compelling, just really not a very controversial tweet. And a guy named Andrew responded to me and said, ha, you mean all the jobs Biden destroyed with his lockdown mania? Now, as you can probably imagine, there's like three or four layers on which this is very fallacious. We're talking about job creation right now. Jobs, we're gaining jobs. And of course, the job losses that we saw happened under Donald Trump. And so the comment just, it doesn't make any sense. But I said, hey, here's an opportunity to try to figure out where this person's coming from. So the first thing was, I wanted to establish, does the person even know what I'm talking about? So I wrote back and I said, did you see the numbers today? Because they may not even know that I think it was 678,000 jobs were created in February. They might just be responding without having any idea what it is that I'm talking about. And Andrew wrote back and said, yeah, meaning I did see the jobs numbers. You can't brag about job creation when your party caused all the job loss. And again, bragging, we're just talking about what are the jobs numbers? Is it good to create jobs? And if it is, if you blame who's in the Oval Office when jobs are lost, don't they get credit when jobs are created? Now, you and I, hopefully all of us, have a more nuanced understanding of job creation. And we understand that to some degree, on a delay, job creation or job loss partially reflects the actions of the president, but to a significant degree has to do with global factors, broader economic factors, and things that have nothing to do with the president. But you've got to be able to play both sides. If you blame a president for job loss, you've got to at least give some equivalent amount of credit for job creation. But this person is so confused. You can't brag about job creation when your party caused the job loss. So I followed up and tried to explain. I said, quote, almost all the job loss was in 2020 when Donald Trump was president. What exactly are you referring to? To which Andrew responded, the needless policies that were under Democrats via their governors and congressmen. They shut the country down needlessly. It's been shown many times lockdown policies didn't help stop the spread, but hurt, devastated the economy. And so a couple different things. First of all, this experiment was basically a waste of time. And what I mean by that is each response moved the discussion to something different. And it didn't even seem to comprehend that time moves forward as we understand it and who was president at different points in time. But it's also wrong on some pretty basic facts. Number one, the economy, even by the end, I mean, listen, I'm glad to admit it because, again, it has a little to do with the president, but not that much. By the end of Trump's presidency, the economy was looking pretty okay, and it continued improving under Joe Biden. We now have a very shaky stock market and inflation, and we have these global things. But that trend, we were already seeing it under Trump, and it continued under Biden. So even the claim that everything that was done in 2020 hurt the economy irreversibly, it's just not true. But maybe more importantly, we learned that it doesn't matter, even if I try to engage in good faith and understand where this person is coming from. I posted about February jobs numbers. The guy responded and talked about job losses from 2020, but blamed Biden for them, even though Trump was president, then changed the conversation to so-called Democratic lockdowns, even though it was all under Trump's watch. I mean, it's red herring after red herring after straw man after red herring. So I think what I learned is this is a waste of my time. And I don't know, because I don't know this Andrew guy, I don't know if he's ignorant and maybe cognitively limited in terms of being able to engage on the facts, or whether he's arguing in bad faith, or whether he's just trolling me, or whether he was confused, or whatever the case may be. I just don't know, quite frankly. But needless to say, we didn't learn anything from that conversation. And I've probably had my fill for at least a couple of months. But if I decide to do this again, I'll come back to you. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here is a voicemail caller who asks about something that really opens up a major can of worms, major can of worms. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David. So I've been slowly getting more involved in the stock market recently. I was just wondering if you had any recommendations as to who you might listen to for advice for that, or if you have anyone yourself. Thanks.
So listen, here's the deal. You don't need to listen to anyone. You don't need... My advice on this continues to be pay no attention to stock pickers or market timers of any kind. The advice is the financial advising industry is 99% based on making really simple things appear to be complicated so that you pay someone for advice. Is the stock market going up? Keep buying index funds. Is the stock market going down? Keep buying index funds. That's it. That's the strategy. And then just wait. You've got to filter out the noise. And we've recently on live streams been doing kind of debunkings of so-called financial guru Dave Ramsey's financial advice, which is often sort of like just right-wing Christianity based. It's not something I like to get involved in myself. I've talked before about the futility of picking individual stocks. If you believe that you know something no one else does, and you can pick individual stocks and know when to buy and when to sell, allocate some small amount of your assets to that. And I consider it gambling. I own some individual stocks, but the vast majority should be in the lowest possible cost, wide, broad-based index funds. And over time, those tend to go up, and you don't need to worry about, oh, well, the market's down 2%. Do I buy? You set up a schedule and that's it. I buy once a month on the first of the month. I buy twice a month, the first and the 15th. If stocks are going down, if the market's going down, you're getting a discount. Great. You keep buying. If stocks are going up, the stuff you've already bought becomes worth more. And then in terms of who to follow, if you believe that someone in particular has really great stock picking skills, whether you like Dave Ramsey, or I doubt he gives individual stock advice, or like Jim Cramer or some newsletter or whatever, devote some small portion of your assets. But my advice is about who to get advice from. No one. The strategy is buy broad-based index funds and just keep buying. And next month, we're actually going to interview Nick Majuli, who just put out a book about this, saying you got to filter out the noise. This individual stock picking and people saying, get in now, get out now. It's a distraction. We'll talk about that more next month. We have a great bonus show for you today. McDonald's is temporarily closing 850 restaurants in Russia, and it led to massive lines outside of McDonald's in Russia. We are going to talk about the increase in the portion of Americans now living paycheck to paycheck, partially because of inflation. And we are also, this is good news. Congress has passed a bill to bolster the Postal Service without cutting back on delivery, which it looked like they were going to be doing, slowing down and cutting back on delivery. So all good news and all of those stories are on today's bonus show. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Remember that Alex Jones has issued an anti-endorsement of the bonus show. Alex Jones hates the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
The fact that he is so against it should make you think, damn, there's probably something interesting happening on that bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. And we have just a couple days left. If you would like to apply for content coaching, if you are a content creator and you would like to participate in free, this is free coaching. We're going to pick four or five people. We've had about 100 apply so far. You can apply at davidpacman.com/coaching. Don't email me about the coaching. Emails will be ignored. If you're interested, apply at davidpacman.com/.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
CT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house!
right there. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. One that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The most tragic situation is currently now in the city of Mariupol, on the Sea of Azov. The city is being bombarded from the air. It's being hit by artillery fire.
High-level talks between Russia and Ukraine have failed to make progress toward a ceasefire, as the Red Cross warns of an apocalyptic situation in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol, where Russian forces bombed a women and children's hospital Wednesday, killing three. We'll speak to journalist Bell True of The Independent, who's been reporting on civilians being targeted in other Ukrainian cities.
This is the main school for Chedoma. It caters to all ages. The ground floor is preschool, but it's also a secondary school. And as you can see, it was utterly devastated in a missile strike just yesterday. It's unclear exactly what the target was, but this is very much a school.
We'll also go to the Poland-Ukraine border to look at the escalating refugee crisis. Over 2.2 million people have fled the fighting in Ukraine. And we'll speak to an activist in Russia about the country's growing anti-war movement and the state crackdown. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russian forces are continuing to shell the besieged Ukrainian city of Mariupol, a day after a Russian missile struck a maternity hospital, killing three people and injuring 17 others. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky condemned the bombing as an atrocity, accusing Russia of shelling a humanitarian corridor meant to allow Mariupol residents to flee. The Red Cross has described the situation as apocalyptic, with the Mariupol residents cut off from food, water, power and heat for over a week amidst freezing temperatures. The city's mayor says 1,200 civilians have been killed over the past 10 days, but that figure has not been verified. City officials have begun burying bodies in mass graves. Those who managed to escape Mariupol described harrowing scenes.
We needed to run 50 meters to the place of evacuation. We quickly packed our things, and then the mortar started shooting. We fell on the ground. I was thinking I would never stand up again.
There were bodies laying near one of the stores in Mariupol for 3 days, women and men. Locals covered them with carpets, and they're just laying there.
The World Health Organization says it's verified 20 attacks on healthcare facilities, workers, and ambulances across Ukraine since Russia invaded 2 weeks ago. In Turkey, top diplomats from Ukraine and Russia wrapped up a meeting today without reaching an agreement on a ceasefire to ease the humanitarian crisis. Ukraine says it's opened 7 humanitarian corridors, but that only one of them near the city of Sumy was currently functioning. After headlines, we'll spend the rest of the hour on Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the resulting refugee crisis. The White House warned Wednesday Russia may deploy banned weapons in its assault on Ukraine. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki tweeted, "We should all be on the lookout for Russia to possibly use chemical or biological weapons in Ukraine or to create a false flag operation using them." Psaki's comments came after